You're listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network.
Because everybody was asking. I can't believe we never reviewed the first two seasons, but we are here to review Fargo, the third season of the show, which has, this is the one thing I forgot to do, because all the other two seasons kind of have little things that tie back and forth with each other. Completely forgot to look up what the Easter eggs were for that. Was there something I was missing that in the third season that ties directly to the first two?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mr. Wrench.
Mr. Wrench?
Yeah, who is in the first season and the second season. And is in this. So in the first season, he's one of the henchmen, basically, and he gets arrested. And that's when Nikki Swain goes, like, meeting up with him on the bus. He's the silent, assassin type character.
Right. The Russian type guy?
No.
He's got the fringe jacket.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, so he has been in all three of these, the same actor, but.
No, but, like, in the second, he's a child, and he's in, like, the very final scene when Hansi, right?
I'm going to go with your expert opinion.
He's in the final scene of the second season when, like, he's on the playground and there's those two kids. And so Mr. Wrench is one of the children that's in that.
Well, I think we've already identified who the expert here yes. in the room is. That is Morgan you're listening to. Morgan, why don't you tell the folks there a little bit about yourself since you're new to OneOfUs.net?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm Morgan Davis. I run an awesome music site called Overload. And previously I've been the co-managing editor at Comics Bulletin and I've contributed to a bunch of different places around the web. And then right now I'm currently in the process of contributing to a place called Film Daily, which is relaunching, so we'll have info on that.
And I know you said you've written articles about the Fargo TV series in the past.
Yeah, I co-run a pop culture site called Loser City that's also like a media collective, and basically we kind of mentor and work with younger writers to help them get set up for clips for pitching and then navigate the world of pitching so that they can kind of go into it knowing more, because even if you go to school for journalism, they don't necessarily train you about how much you should ask for, what rates are, what other people are getting paid, what are like some of the other expectations. So we kind of work on that, and specifically we're focused on kind of improving diversity in pop culture writing, because a lot of places it's typically people who all look and sound the same. So
indeed, I kind of feel like after that list, you being here, you're just adding me to your collection.
Right.
Well, mark that one off. Okay, next. What's Ain't It Cool News doing? And then, of course, Russell Summers from Deliberations of Doom.
That's right. Sans my other half, Rob Summers.
Well, you know.
I might get a word in edgewise. And so I'm on Deliberations of Doom with Chris and Patience and Phil. And my brother and I are filmmakers. Our short film, Couples Night, will be at the Fantasia Fest in Montreal in July and the Popcorn Frights Fest in Florida in August.
Cool. Yeah, and it's good. I like it.
Oh, thank you.
And you've been getting kudos all over the goddamn place for it. So every time I get on Facebook, it's somebody else going, that was great. I was like, good for you. I should really write something. Anyway, we're talking about Fargo Season 3, so let's dovetail right back into that. Like, moving forward to the year 2010, which you know almost immediately because people have cell phones, mm-hmm. which definitely changes the writing. It's amazing. I've read whole articles about that, how much you have to totally rework a script just if, like, oh, fuck, there's cell phones.
I mean, if you think about it, the entire run of Seinfeld would be different if they had cell phones.
And half the horror movies ever made.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's like so many of those that you'd be out of that situation a lot quicker.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, don't go there. That dude died. Oh, yeah. And this one follows, and this is definitely a spoiler cast, so we will go into like the more deep cut here. But the plot, essentially, for those who haven't, is Ewan McGregor plays dual roles as Ray Stussy and what's the other brother?
Emmett Stussy.
Emmett being the well-to-do brother, kind of naive seems like, you know, like he's a businessman, but he just runs parking lots, and he kind of seems like he almost fell backwards into it. Mm-hmm. Like, but it's doing well. He's not like a billionaire or anything, but he's got a nice house. Meanwhile, his brother has kind of fucked off his whole life and has determined that everything that's gone wrong with his life is because of his brother, and it all came down to a valuable stamp that his brother kept. And it's some time in the show before we get the full explanation of what the hell's the deal with that. But he's motivated to get on this sort of like, you owe me, by his new girlfriend, which is played by the, frankly, startlingly good-looking Mary Elizabeth Winstead. She's one of those girls that's been on my massive crush list for a long time now. Playing a con man, although she says, oh, I hate the word con. It's so negative. It's short for confidence. Who he was dealing with as her parole officer. So, shaky. And she's pushing him towards doing something about it. Meanwhile, you have Carrie Coon, who's, man, had two really massive big TV things this year. Between this and The Leftovers, it's hard to imagine she's not going to win an Emmy this year.
She's so hopefully awesome.
Yeah, she really is. She plays the, you know, it's Fargo. There has to be a primary character who's a policewoman, and it is, in fact, her in this particular case, who is dealing with a scenario that ties back into Mary Elizabeth Winstead's noir-named character Nikki Swango and the lesser Stussy, where a murder happens that was an accident. I mean, not the murder was an accidental, it was just the wrong person got murdered, that ties back into the stamps and everything else, and she's stuck trying to put together the pieces of, like, 8 billion things. But then on top of that, you have David Thewlis in the grossest villain I've seen in, like, 10 years. Seriously. Like, Voldemort is, like, gagging when he looks at this guy.
Yeah.
Like, this well-spoken Englishman who comes in and basically just forcibly takes over Ray's company. Not Ray, I'm sorry.
Emmett's
company. And lots, of course, lots and lots and lots of wonderful side characters in this thing. Like Michael Stuhlbarg, who's always great, playing Emmett's loyal business partner here. Shea Whigham as the idiot misogynist county sheriff. Scoot McNairy as a drug addict parolee of Ray's, who's like, you know, Scoot McNairy just disappears into whatever he does. It's so very smart and perfectly tied together. But I will say, of all the seasons for me, the first four episodes were the hardest to get past of all the three seasons. It took a while. I'm like, okay, I see you're putting the pieces in place, but that distinctive Fargo style hasn't really gotten into gear yet, and it's just kind of dry. Now, that being said, once it does get into gear, and certainly the last four episodes, Jesus Christ.
Well, what was the line of demarcation for you where it started to get more interesting? Was there a particular incident or moment?
I don't know precisely. Maybe when David Thewlis just makes Michael Stuhlbarg drink from the penis cup.
That was pretty amazing. I know for a lot of people, the LA episode was kind of like the part where it started to click together for them, where she goes out to LA to try to figure out information about her, Carrie Coon's character, goes out there to try to figure out what happened to her grandfather in the past to make him come all the way out to the small town, and, or not grand, I guess step, their relationship.
Yeah, step-grandfather or
something like that. Yeah. Or it's her stepfather and her son's step-grandfather. But Ray Wise is out there, is like playing kind of the almost the same character that you see in The Big Lebowski, who's like narrating the whole film.
That whole sequence, I was like, I was really tired when I was watching it. I was like, did I accidentally switch over to Twin Peaks? I mean, not just because Ray Wise is on that, but because it's a very Lynchian scenario.
Yeah.
Where it's like, is she dead?
Well, so, like, do you mean Nikki or...
Nikki, yeah.
Yeah, so the going theory that I've seen on that, Alan Sepinwall had a really great essay about it, about how Ray Wise's character seems to be a take on the Wandering Jew, and who's essentially... he pops up, like, all over in pop culture. Like, in DC Comics, he's the Phantom Stranger.
Sure.
And is kind of like this Jewish character who has been doomed to walk the earth forever to atone for his... abandonment of Jesus Christ.
Sometimes he's the Count Saint Germain.
Right,
well, yeah.
Yeah. So he pops up a lot. But, like, basically the idea in this is that he is letting Nikki Swango return to life in order to get, like, holy vengeance. And that's also, like, what's going on with, you know, the sheriff character as well, is to, like, kind of, like, drive home that both of them are on a path of a form of righteousness that's very violent and order-driven. And so that's why the Russian character never reappears, because he doesn't fit into that.
Huh. Well, yeah, I guess so. He does kind of just disappear. And, yeah, wow. That whole sequence is, like I said, it's confusing tonally a bit, because this appears to be supernatural stuff in the middle. I can't think of any other way to say that it's not.
They did that in the second season as well with UFOs. UFOs.
Yeah, I was going to say it's something that they stole. Oh, cats are about to explode. and both times it takes you off guard, but it just kind of deepens your affection for the whole thing. At least it did for me. What do you think, Russ?
I totally agree. And obviously, Ray Wise is perfectly cast as that character. And it seems, I mean, it's so deliberately ambiguous. It's open to interpretation in so many different ways. And I think that's one of the things I really liked about it, is that you can have this show that has that Coen-esque tone, and then realistic, but it has sort of that thriller element to it, and then it switches and goes to something more ambiguous, and there's no real seam between them. I don't know. I really enjoyed that part of it.
Well, I think it fits in with the Coen brothers too, though, because like Barton Fink also has that.
Oh, right. And I think that's the thing that I love about the show so much, is that Noah Hawley has really taken all those tropes that you love about the Coen brothers that are so unique to them, and then put them in a whole different order within the show. So I always love seeing that, and I love seeing, like, oh, that's kind of something the Coen brothers would do. That's kind of a Coen brothers shout-out.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, it's the weirdest show in that it's so utterly, completely, tonally the Coen brothers. And obviously certain tropes, the female policewoman, the really smart, incredibly smart criminal, like, those things, or at the very least, very well-spoken criminal, those things are definitely coming right from, like, the original Fargo to some extent. But it's never the plot, you know. They're never taking, okay, we're just redoing Fargo. It's like, here's other stuff that happened in Fargo that just so happens to have similar
elements. I think that's been the genius of the show, because obviously when I heard there was going to be a Fargo
show, we all sighed and rolled our eyes.
And he did such a great job with it, because he took that. And it's funny, it's such a tap dancing act. It's sort of right on the edge of, this could have gone horribly wrong, and it didn't.
You're like, when are you going to do The Big Lebowski?
Yeah.
I want to see that show.
Well, in a way, I mean, they had the great shot with Ray Wise showing up in the bowling alley. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the perfect reference to that exact shot.
Oh, that's, you can't help but think of that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It was really great.
With Sam Neill. By the way, what's your favorite Ray Wise performance?
Oh, God.
I love Ray Wise. I'm a big fan.
Where do I even go?
I mean, like, Twin Peaks is great, but I also have to say I have a major soft spot for his American Horror Story performance when he's the, like, serial killer jazz man.
Yeah.
Even though that kind of fits into the Twin Peaks one, but I like how you think that that's going to be like a one episode throwaway character, and then all of a sudden he's like one of the main romantic foils in that season. But
mine would have to be the Battle of Shaker Heights with Shia LaBeouf. I can't say enough about that.
What? Shut up.
But he's great in it.
And a lot of people haven't even seen it, but Reaper, that TV show where he played.
Oh, yeah.
You know
devil?
What? That is great. That is a totally good call.
Yeah.
Totally.
He's so good in that show. So
that, you know, the show, especially the first season or so, was actually really good.
Yeah,
so
it was entertaining. It was like, and I forget the name of the actor, who's like the bigger guy who's in it, but that guy was gone on to bigger and better things.
Yeah, he's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, sorry to get off track there. I just love Ray Wise. He's terrific.
He pretty much improves anything he appears in. Even 100%. If it's good already, it, like, becomes better as soon as he walks
in. He's been done so many things where he is involved in the supernatural. There's just a supernatural air about him when
he walks into
anything because of that. As well, like, Michael Stuhlbarg, boy, this guy is kind of like, I mean, obviously he's been working for a while, so I'm to play Arnold Rothstein in Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, I love that.
He played Andy Hertzfeld in Steve Jobs. Really, like, Highly underrated movie, I think, is how the Summers brothers would put it.
So great.
Deeply in love with that movie.
And great, and he's so well cast in that. But I agree with you. He's one of those guys that anytime he shows up in a movie, I think of, obviously, I was like everybody else the first time I saw him was in the Coen brothers movie,
A Serious Man.
Serious Man. Yeah. And then after that, it was so funny because he was so great, and you realized, oh, he'd been in all these other movies that I'd seen, and I just hadn't noticed. But he is so great, and it was again a really great callback to cast him in this movie.
Yeah, especially because like this character connects over to that in a lot of ways, because I feel like he's basically playing the character of Job in this movie.
That's true.
Show, because he's
That's a really good point.
He has so much faith in Emmett and doesn't believe that like Emmett's going to steer him wrong no matter what, even though Emmett at numerous points sells him out and betrays him and doesn't.
He is the ultimate victim of this season.
Yeah.
He's the guy who, like, he gets it. He's the most innocent guy who gets it the worst.
Yeah, and Varga essentially does what the devil did to, or actually what God did to Job in the Bible, and, like, makes him go through all these, like, horrible calamities, including being plagued. So, you know, you've got that going on. There's a lot of, like, real strange biblical things that happen in this season.
But, yeah. And, you know, once again, not the least of which is that Ray Wise appearance. You can't help but put that feel to it there.
Yeah, and I think, like, I know a lot of people were really hurt by Nikki Swango's ultimate fate. But I think that, like, when you look at it, since she gets into that shootout where she corners Emmett and is, like, seems like she's going to take him out once and for all. And then once she turns the gun on the cop, it's like clear that like she has lost the path of righteousness and has to be dispensed with.
I mean, not that she was terribly righteous to begin with, but like that her mission of revenge, whatever, of righteous revenge was definitely like, okay, you were going to kill an innocent guy, so you fail.
Right. She was like a very Old Testament type of righteousness once she lost Ray. And I think that like in that moment, you see her essentially kind of abandoning that, therefore she loses that protection.
It's startling when she dies, and the way they do it where you assume she's not dead at first, you know, but you know, one of those like classic shootouts, they both got it. But I wasn't disturbed by it. I was like, yeah, that was earned.
I totally agree. I was definitely one of those things where it was unexpected, but it felt so fitting along with the rest of the show. So
now, Emmett's death, on the other hand, actually did bother me. I was kind of like, I get it, and it makes sense, but I felt like he had already experienced redemption by that point.
Nah, I thought he totally had it coming.
You think he got out too
easy?
I
thought it was a great moment to see Mr. Wrench there taking him out. You know, karma had come at last.
Especially with, like, what happened with Sai, because, like, even at the end there, Sai, who, like, is one of the few... I mean, he's not entirely innocent, but one of the more innocent characters who is, like, now essentially, like, has... He's not dead, but he has... He hasn't really gotten anything that he actually deserves for having this faith in Emmett, and I don't know that Emmett deserves to walk away considering how many lives he ruined and how he doesn't really show remorse for having ruined them. Like, there is that scene with Nikki where he's trying to atone in a way, but even when he's like begging her to shoot him, that feels like he's just trying to take the easy way out still.
And he turns around and tells the cop that she's got a gun.
Right.
Yeah. I totally agree. He was definitely, I think that was, it was fitting with his character that he was that guy who had coasted for so long on his charm and his success. And so he does, he's very responsible and he's very complicit in what he does. He completely allows Varga to do all those terrible things. And so, yeah, I think he totally deserved it.
I will say the things that I didn't like as much about the season, I thought it spent almost too much time with the Stussy brothers. And that's partially because, as almost always with Ewan McGregor, I'm always like, he's a really good actor. He's never been a great actor. I've never seen him transcend really good to great.
I am just going to have to totally fucking disagree.
Here there's no exception for me where I'm like, okay, he's doing fine. He's just fine.
Allow me to retort.
Okay.
I would say that Ewan McGregor is one of my favorite actors, and I think it's because I feel that he's one of those actors that's so good he makes it look easy. Mm-hmm. And so that is why I disagree. I think, you know, his performance as these two brothers was so amazing, and it didn't call attention to itself, and I think that's what McGregor's really good at with his acting.
Right, exactly, and that's why he doesn't really necessarily stand out to people as much.
So there you go.
I like actors who are like,
and everybody does, but I think it's one of those things where it's easy to point to people who make these gigantic transformations and these almost hammy sort of things, and that he doesn't do any of that. I mean, he obviously has the wig and the And the other, but that's really just so you know which brother is which when they're on screen.
Yeah, he's not really scenery chewing. I mean, he's kind of like the acting equivalent of like a Ringo Starr, where like people think that he's not actually that great because he's not making himself like super obvious all the time. But when you look at
what he did there, it was a kind of a backhanded thing, where he's like, he's Ringo, but then Ringo's awesome, and that's why.
Ringo is awesome.
Yeah, right. So there you go. Ewan McGregor, the Ringo Starr.
of Fargo season three, or of his whole career.
Yeah. And I mean, he's perfectly capable of doing like more out there performances. Like when you look at something like Velvet Goldmine, like where he's basically playing Iggy Pop. And I think like in that, like, you know, you can get that kind of performance from Ewan McGregor if you want. But I think most of the time, he's kind of the grounding force in a lot of films that go in crazier directions. Like Trainspotting, I don't think would be as effective if he was a more flamboyant actor.
Well, because everybody else is so goddamn flamboyant in that movie. He's definitely the grounding point. He's the audience avatar, you know, of that film. He's got to be a little more grounded. I think all too often, because he's such a good-looking actor, he ends up in that role of the audience avatar. Maybe that's why we never see him play as many extreme roles either. You know, like very... He's not a character actor. He's a, you know, he's a leading man.
Although I think he's been able to do that. Like, he had kind of a character actor role in The Men Who Stare at Goats.
That's true.
I did not care for that movie.
I'm not saying it was a good movie.
Great title, though.
Yeah.
Terrific title. And even with Velvet Goldmine, which I watched three times, every time I feel like this is the time I'm going to really get this and go, this is great. And I'm like, sure is a pretty film. Didn't really like it. I should like it. I love Iggy Pop and David Bowie.
We're
going to
get into Velvet Goldmine on another podcast. That's all I'm saying.
I think we actually covered it on Digital Noise once, where we talked smack. But whatever. We didn't like shoot smack movies. Like the characters, though. So.
Well, that's because me and Morgan weren't there to hang out. Don't mind. So.
Major points, once again, David Thewlis, who now is officially my favorite villain of the three seasons. Something about having rotting...
Which is a pretty big standard to rise to.
Something about having rotting teeth right off the bat makes me go, okay, I can't even look at you.
Plus just all the noises he makes. Yeah. It's just like, I love that like every single scene he's in, he's making some sort of like just grotesque sound.
Yeah. It's almost like they mic'd his whole body.
Yeah.
And when you find out why his teeth are rotting, because he's anorexic,
bulimic.
The right term?
Bulimic. Yeah.
Bulimic. Like, oh my God, there's just nothing about this guy to like. And the dialogue they've written for him is so sparkling. It's such a juxtaposition against everything else about this guy.
And I love that he's so quietly evil. Mm-hmm. And you just the moment he turns up and you start to have that unease, and he's always the calmest presence within whatever scene he's in, despite the chaos going around it. And that is why I thought he was such a terrifying character. And you always felt like he was two steps ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, and like his whole arc very much felt like Brazil to me, because he's like this like intense symbol of bureaucracy in a way, but he's exploiting it to his advantage. And the way that they framed him always kind of gave me this like Gilliam-esque feel, because he's always like, they did a lot of shots where it's like looking up at him from weird angles, and like his face is always dominating the frame. Like when you go back and watch it, like he just kind of has like grin just takes up the entire screen, and you're forced to like deal with that the whole time and know that this man is like wealthier than you'll ever be and smarter than everyone else in a room, and doesn't really care that he looks like an actual reptile.
And that we'll never really know who he is either,
right?
And I love that he had that almost insistent presence when he was on screen. Just that first scene where they have to confront him, and they say, well, we're going to pay back this loan that you gave us, this mysterious loan money that we got. And you realize that, no, you've signed a deal with the devil.
Right.
And that there was just – they kept trying to argue with him, and there was nothing to say.
I found that very aggravating to watch.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm just like, you guys seriously aren't going to call a lawyer or the FBI or anything?
They do.
They do, and then he kills the boy.
Yeah, but you call another lawyer.
See, and they had
– I mean, you just go, I'm not
accepting
this.
But that was what I really liked, was they had that great moment where the guy clicks on the website.
Uh-huh.
And it's the camera thing of them, and then they, of course, get eliminated. And I just – I thought that was such a chilling moment when you realize, like, there was nowhere you could go. This mm-hmm. guy had you no matter what you did.
Plus, I think that it kind of riffs on, like, that Midwestern politeness in a sense, and what like some reviewers have termed, like reviewers who are from that area, like Todd Vanderwerf, have kind of pointed out, is like, it's actually more accurately Midwestern passive aggression. And so like, this is kind of like the epitome of that, because they think that they've mastered it. And then like this true master enters the room and
knows
like,
exactly how to work them.
Yeah. Knows how to do it, and knows that if like they're presented with like the slightest obstacle. So like you said, like call another lawyer, but I can totally see these guys being like, well, we tried that, so I guess we're just going to give in. And you know, like that's,
I know, but that's frustrating regardless. You're just like, yeah, don't let this happen. What are you doing? Especially as it goes along and it gets to that point where Emmett is just like, yeah, whatever. Just, I'll sign that. Okay, sure. And you're like, what are you doing?
Well, even like their escape plan that they think when it's the widow Goldfarb that they think that is like offering them this road to redemption. And then it turns out that she was in on it from the start too.
Yeah. Yeah, who is great, by the way. Yeah. Just like the president of the Battlestar Galactica world. What did you guys think about Carrie Coon's performance overall and her arc in the show?
I loved it. I liked the way that they connected to the story that her stepfather wrote about the Wally-esque robot that keeps wanting to help and no one will listen.
Yeah, yeah.
Because initially I was like, where are they going with this? And even though like I could tell like what it was saying, it was like I wasn't sure where the full delivery of that was going to be. And then as she starts integrating that into her perspective on life, and like once she fully connects that that's who she has become, is when she's finally able to kind of break free from that cycle, and like all the automatic devices start finally seeing her, and then she eventually winds up at Homeland Security instead of working out as a police department and library.
I did not put those things together with the devices who just don't even see her.
Right.
It's like, did not even put those two things into the same context. I guess I was like, okay, the stuff she's involved in is interesting, but she wasn't that interesting for a while until she was.
Right.
You know, once again, you're like, and I think that came when they found someone for her to play off of the mm-hmm. other female cop who has the motor mouth.
Yeah, it was like motivating her.
Yeah, that's when her character really clicked for me. And once again, from then on, you're like, wow, she's so good in this show. Already talked about how much Mary Elizabeth Winstead can do no wrong. I will brook no dispute. And she is also really fantastic in this. I think she can equally play a villain or a good guy, and she's best when she's somewhere in the middle like she is right here. Thought she's terrific. The whole time, you never really know. Does she really love this guy, or mm-hmm. is she completely just using him? Because it gives you feels
and
moments
do you
for
think
both.
That they answered that question. I still am not sure
no.
that they totally answered it. Yeah,
I don't think they did
I think
at
they
all.
Did. I think it was pretty clear. I don't think that she would have been given the second chance if her love for him wasn't real. Because I think that that's what Ray Wise's character hones in on, and he pretty much tells her as much when he's in the bowling alley and allows her to get this other moment. I think when he presents her with a kitten, that was his way of testing to see whether that love was still there, because she was no longer like, what point would there be for her to do that?
That's
at that
very
point?
True.
I don't know. I still was somewhat I still felt like she was just out for the revenge.
The question is,
she'd
like,
been wronged and
like
all that, so.
It feels like maybe at first she wasn't really in love with this guy, but
yeah.
as it went along and they were actually going through these obstacles together, then.
Could be, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Okay.
So we'll go to final thoughts on this one. And Russell, why don't you start us out?
Wow, season three. I was pretty much in all the way from the beginning. I thought it's interesting. I guess everybody at this point, there's been enough Fargo seasons that people were asking, what's your favorite Fargo season? I think two was pretty amazing. This one was up there. It was great. It was everything I hoped it would be. So when I heard they were going to do a thing about twins, and I'm a twin for Fargo, I was really excited to see. And then, of course, it was going to be Ewan McGregor. So I don't know. I can't recommend it high enough. I thought it was probably some of the best in this golden age of television that everybody keeps telling us about. I think Fargo has quietly become – I mean, it's up there, I think, with stuff like Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So. What do you give it an arbitrary rating?
Do you want me to give it an arbitrary?
Give it an arbitrary rating, yeah.
I'm gonna give it six decapitations out of six decapitations.
What about you, Morgan?
I loved it too. This is actually probably my favorite as well. I enjoyed a lot of last season, but I have to say that I felt that last season fell apart at the end. The UFO stuff in particular, I just was not with that. I thought the character work was really solid in the second season, but it just kind of left a lot of stuff unfinished and not in a way that felt purposeful to me. Whereas this, I felt was it took a braver stance in that it forced you to have to just follow along and trust that this team was going to be able to follow through on everything and get the points across in a way that was going to be effective but also fit into the larger things that are going on with Fargo. And I thought it did that extremely well, and I was really impressed with how well it held up to this kind of like ambiguity with everything that's going on, because at the beginning you have that weird bureaucracy scene that happens in Russia and you're kind of wondering like, when is this going to come back? And I love that in the final moment, which I know some people are kind of conflicted on, it circles back to that where it's now in the present and we're getting like a different version of bureaucracy, but it's still this thing of like, what is going to prevail, rational thought, and what's supposed to hold society together, or this totally chaotic anarchic force that just tells you what you think is right is actually incorrect and their version of reality is more correct than your version of reality. And I just, you know, like, I feel like right now that's especially important. Like, this is, it was the type of storytelling that I wish more people would be doing right now, kind of, because I think that a lot of people feel that reality is like shifted and that things that you took for granted of how society is supposed to work no longer function. And so
Berenstain Bears is written wrong.
Right. Yeah. Everything is just topsy turvy. So I really appreciated that they did that and did it in such a way that was, it was subtle, and it required you to pay full attention, like from the get go, and just trust and just like go along for the ride and wait and see. And I just value that. I thought that it was there. I just feel that there aren't enough creators that trust their audience that much, and I really appreciate that the Fargo team does.
Did anybody else think there was anything to the Billy Bob Thornton coming on to do the voiceover, the narrator in that in the Peter and the Wolf episode, since he was in the first season as a character?
I mean, you mean something more than just
That actually meant anything?
I think it was just something that they wanted
kind
to
of
do.
A callback.
Fair enough.
But did
that was my favorite. That was probably my favorite
that,
episode.
They talked about that Ewan McGregor's character briefly mentions Stan Grossman, and Stan Grossman is one of the characters in the original Fargo.
From the first movie.
Yeah, he's the father-in-law's assistant or second.
So would this make it the first time they've tied the series into the movie?
No, the first season ties it in with
That's right.
With the money.
Yeah. Okay, so
so it does take place in the same universe, obviously.
In a really weird way.
But I was kind of hoping Stan Grossman would show up in this season because they mentioned him. I thought maybe he'd show up, but he did not.
Sorry. You're like,
maybe the next
show.
One. Maybe the next one.
If they have a next one.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely going to have a next one. There's no way they won't know.
This season to me is like a huge, impressive looking firework with the world's most frustratingly long fuse. As you're just, like, you're going, man, I know this is going to be good. I'm so excited. And we've lit it and it's on the way. And you're like, come on, man. When is this thing going to fucking
did you
take
feel
off?
That way through the LA episode as well? Was that something that.
No, I enjoyed the LA episode.
But had the show started to pick up for you by the time?
Yeah,
the
I think
LA.
So.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there's no episode I don't like of this. There's nothing I'm like, oh, that was bad. It was just, okay, a little more dry than we're used to. But once it does, like the second half of the season is phenomenal. It's just gangbusters. It's one big shocker after another. And it's so well written, so well performed that it's hard not to kind of, well, be in love with everything Noah Hawley touches right now.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus
yeah,
Christ.
Legion was amazing.
Legion was so just, that was maybe my favorite show this year, but wait till Twin Peaks is over before I say for sure.
I'm like surprised how, like, I thought more people would be tuning into it because I feel like a lot of people that I would expect would be in love with that show, like, either just didn't.
Well,
even though it was out, or like somehow just
it did kind of slip under the radar.
And it was marketed to superhero as a superhero show, and superhero fans got two episodes in, were like, I have no idea what's going on. This is already crap, and stopped watching it.
Even though it's pretty accurate to like the actual Legion comic,
true.
The more recent one that was done,
and people who like more stuff like this, who like more arty television, more experimental, were like, oh, it's a superhero show. I'm not going to watch that. So it was kind of right in the middle where people were like, it just didn't, its audience was that Venn diagram, like slice of both.
Yeah.
and then going over to more, I think anybody who likes arty TV, who likes Twin Peaks, who likes Fargo would love Legion.
Yeah.
Even if they can't stand superhero.
But
they
I should think have Legion this. Was, how you felt about this season was how I felt about it. It took a little while to sort of coalesce. Mm. Now I started to realize what the show was, but I stuck with it. It is a show you have to stick with.
But, you know, I mean, and I feel like almost every season of pretty much every season of Fargo to some extent is that. I think they all three seasons start a little slow and take their time, but this is the one that took the longest to get there. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that. It pays off in such a huge way. But I give this 8 out of 10 old stale donuts. It's probably a lot of those sitting around in the show. Please, Noah Hawley, give us another season of Fargo. Well, I mean, do Legion season 2 first. Yes, definitely do that. But then another season of Fargo. You actually mentioned you were talking about Terry Gilliam.
Yeah.
And I was like, can you imagine if Noah Hawley did for Brazil what he does for Fargo?
Yeah, that'd
where
be
it's
amazing.
Like, I'm going to do a show about completely different characters in the world of Brazil.
And I feel like Brazil would be really, it would fit that format extremely well. Because, I mean, you only scratch the surface of what's going on in that society, right, yeah. Like in that movie. So there's so much you can do.
I mean, just the idea that we would have a whole episode just following around a character like the Robert De Niro character.
Oh, yeah.
The super air conditioning man.
Right.
I'm like, take my money. Take it.
Well, and it fits in with the Legion stuff, too, of like what is actually happening versus like what is wish fulfillment and fantasy or delusion.
Yeah.
So, you know, which is definitely his bread and butter. So,
I mean, make it happen. And for the record,
already here first.
And for the record, I also want Brian Fuller to do a Jacob's Ladder series, but we'll get to that on some other podcast.
OneOfUs.net has been your one-stop shop for all things geek for years, but there's a side to them many of you have never heard: the subscription side. Subscribe and listen to great podcasts like The Breakfast Pub, The Original Gentleman, and the Watch a Movie With Us series. Head on over to OneOfUs.net, and don't forget your towel.